welcome to American Conservative Talk Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
And we're going to be here to talk about some really sort of kind of interesting stuff that's been going on here in the last week or so.
Yep.
Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Tracy. Hey, have you gotten any golf in?
Don't even bring it up.
I'm sorry.
You know, we had a gorgeous weekend here for Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
And I worked all weekend.
Lucky you. There's folks that would love to be working, whether it was the weekend or no.
Well, I'm not complaining much.
Yeah.
I did get outside for 2.5 hours yesterday.
Doing fun stuff?
Mow the lawn.
Hey, spring has got to be here up in those northern reaches of the United States then.
Yeah.
Your grass is growing.
Yeah, lots and lots and lots.
Lots and lots of grass.
I don't want to put down fertilizer. I did that last year. I put down fertilizer, and it rained for 10 days.
Yeah? Well, that just rains it into the ground down to where the roots can get at it.
Yeah, and let me tell you, we sent 3 kids into the yard. We had to send out helicopters.
You know, I've never really understood that. You sit there and you mow the grass, right? And then you fertilize it and you water it so it can grow some more so you can mow it again so that you can put more fertilizer and water on it. There's something wrong with that picture, Tracy.
Yeah, well, you know, the neighbors tend to frown upon dirt.
I see. Okay.
And rainforest.
Aha. Okay.
The only happy medium is the one that's cut.
I gotcha.
Growing and cut. Anyway, so that was, you know, that was my weekend. The dog just got to spend lots of time outside. CJ spent most of the weekend inside.
Really?
Packing and cleaning and sorting. She did an amazing job for us this weekend. She was really, really, really helpful. And things are really ship-shape around here coming into the summer. So I was,
well,
that was kind of nice.
Well, good for CJ.
I averaged, I worked 12 hours on Saturday, about 10 on Sunday, and 6, but then I added the mowing yesterday.
Yeah. Isn't it great being self-employed?
Well, considering that my business is dealing with people that are facing bankruptcy, my employment prospects are substantial.
Yeah, they really are. But, you know, that really is true about small business owners and folks that are self-employed. They put in way more hours than people that are just doing a job and getting paid and going home.
I cannot tell you how often I sit there and go, you know, I would give almost anything. Actually, I wouldn't give a whole lot of anything to it, but I do once in a while think about getting up, having something to eat, going into work, working for 8 hours, 9 hours, turning around, leaving, and then having the whole rest of the day to do whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
You betcha. Yeah, I'm, you know, some every once in a while that gets I've been both. I've been self-employed and employed by others.
And of course, I like the idea of somebody else paying me for vacation.
Yeah. Well, gee, you know, that's coming even further, I understand. There's some legislation from a guy, one of the legislators that went to Disney World, I believe it was, but it might have been Disneyland, and in the middle of a ride had this incredible epiphany that said, gosh, I wonder why people don't get more vacations. I think I will introduce legislation to make it a law that everybody gets 7 paid days of vacation a year in the first year. And then it goes up from there. Doesn't matter if you're part-time. Doesn't matter if you're full-time. You just get it.
Well, now, isn't that special.
Yeah, isn't that special? Could only happen in the fantasy land of Disney World.
Okay, look. For the last 10 years, if we wanted to go on vacation, we not only needed to have come up with the money to go on vacation,
yep.
We needed to come up with the money to provide all the expenses while we were off on vacation.
Yep.
And enough expenses to cover a month or so after we came back from vacation, because the pump would not be primed and it would take some time to start generating new business.
Yes, indeed.
You know, yeah, usually if we want to take a 2-week vacation, it meant having 2 months worth of money sitting on
exactly.
Which is to say why we've taken exactly 4 vacations in the last 10 years.
Uh-huh. Yep. That's kind of one of the first things that goes. So those people that are self-employed have to really love what they are doing.
I like the fact that I only have 7 bosses.
7 bosses? Oh, your clients.
My clients.
Yes, indeed.
When I started off on doing this business, I like dealing with clients. I mean, there's nothing more that I like having done than, us helping somebody stay in their house.
Yep.
So that's a very, very good, warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yes, indeed.
But clients can be a royal pain in the butt, just like any customer can be a royal pain in the butt.
Absolutely.
And the advantages at this point with my clients, I have all the advantages of dealing with clients and none of the disadvantages.
Exactly.
So I tell people all the time, having this kind of business, it's all the same shit, but none of the stink.
Very good. I like that.
However, Ollie's at the bottom of my feet, and he is farting a storm.
Oh, what do you feed that dog?
Dead animals, apparently.
Apparently.
Really old dead animals. All right. So, enough of the fun stuff.
Let's get into the meat of this.
Last week, around this time,
we were
having a long, deep discussion. No, I was having a soliloquy, is that what they call it? I was ranting. No,
yeah.
I was talking, and we were waiting for California, the people thereof, to suggest whether they were, in fact, sheeple or people.
And the verdict is in.
And the verdict is in, and Bill, as a fellow people out there, tell us, what happened?
There were 6 propositions on the ballot for the entire state of California. Those propositions were put on the ballot at the instigation of the legislators. The legislators had not been able to come up with a budget. The reason that they had not been able to come up with a budget is, in California, it takes a supermajority to pass a budget. And the Dems don't have a supermajority. And yet, they were unwilling to compromise with the R's. And so consequently, they went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And finally, they got 3 R's, actually in the Senate, only 1 R, to agree with them. But the price of that was they had to put on the ballot initiatives that said, do we want a pretty much fake spending cap? Do we want to let the state borrow revenues from the future value of lottery earnings? Do we want to raid the funds that are constitutionally set aside for mental health, children's health, and a couple of other categories. And there was one final one that was put on there that said, and that was Proposition 1F, if the state budget is in deficit, the legislators can have no pay increase while that state budget is in deficit. So, in due course, the voters in the state of California went to the polls, and they voted. And the results are 1A through E went down flamingly in defeat. The most yes votes on any of them were like about 39.7%. So it was almost a 2-to-1 margin. Some of them did lose by 2-to-1. Guess which one passed, like with about 80% of the vote? That is the one that limited legislators' pay. And guess what? The legislators just took an 18% pay cut.
Yay!
Yeah! You betcha! And
like
so
that.
Now we deal with the aftermath of that. And let me tell you, that has been so interesting.
Do they feel our pain now?
Yeah, well, let me tell you what. The Sacramento Bee, New York Times, L.A. Times, all of the big lib corporate papers have said, well, okay, are you Californians happy with yourself now? You really showed them you bankrupted your state. Excuse me? No. The legislators bankrupted the state. In the last 4 years, they have increased the state budget by 40%.
That's a 40%. Little bit above inflation there, Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you got different inflation than we do.
I don't think so. So they all snarked about, oh gosh, aren't you California voters really happy with yourself? You just killed your state. No, I'm sorry. It was the legislators that killed the state. It was the legislators that were unwilling to control public employment. They were the legislators that refused to even think about cutting budgets. They were the legislators that said, no, I have vested interests that I have to reward. And so they did. And now it's come back to bite them in the butt.
Well,
and the only thing they can do is say, oh, you bad people of California, look what you did.
And you guys are going to suffer considerably more, and I'm certain that it's begun to happen, even if nobody's paying a whole lot of attention to it.
Oh,
the
absolutely.
The crash of the real estate market has got to be killing, absolutely killing, you know, tax revenues for the municipalities.
Oh, it is. It hasn't, oddly enough, has not happened here in my home county of Trinity. Mostly the reason for that is properties aren't moving. So they're still working with old data in terms of sales. The problem is none of them are recent sales anymore. They're all old sales because properties aren't moving because people aren't willing to recognize the fact, you know what, folks? Your property values have declined by 40%.
Well, I'm hearing from the places that I pay attention to,
yep,
that there's actually a fair amount of real estate turning over, but very little of it. And something like 40% of it that's turning over,
yeah,
is investors. It's people that are buying the property and not planning on living in it.
Oh, really?
You know,
So they think they're bottom fishing, right?
I would suggest to you that that's what they're doing, is they're bottom fishing. Is they're, you know, prices have come closer to being consistent with incomes. So
yeah, but they aren't there yet.
It's closer to standard rents.
Yep.
So on that basis, and of course, a lot of people are suggesting, and I think it's erroneous, a lot of people are suggesting that all these people that are losing their homes are going to need places to stay, and therefore rental properties are going to be in higher demand. And I think, and I don't have anything to base on this yet, the people that are doing the research are still working on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're wrong. I think we've probably overbuilt by several million houses. And especially in places like California, Arizona, Florida, where Nevada, where the building was just out of control.
Absolutely.
You know, the numbers, the percentage-wise, is probably high. The number I saw recently, and I may be mistaking it, is something like 9 million houses in the country are currently vacant.
Really?
I thought that was an awful high number. That's about, you know, 9% of the housing stock.
Yeah, that, I mean, it just on a gut feel, that sounds high.
However, if you take some pictures of what's going on in places like Las Vegas, Sacramento, Stockton, where you're seeing not, you know, blocks of houses that are empty, not neighborhoods of houses that are empty, but whole developments that are empty.
Wow. You know,
maybe, in fact, you know, that number may not be there. But even let's assume for a second that that number is off by half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
4.5 million houses empty. I'm pretty certain we don't have 4.5 million people on the street.
I haven't seen them around here. But then I might not. You know.
4.5 million people, you know, 4.5 million houses empty. That's a lot of real estate.
Oh yeah.
You know, putting a lot of pressure on two sides.
Absolutely.
You know, that means that there's lots of real estate out there to rent, which is going to force rents lower, not higher.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And lots of stuff out there is going to continue to drive prices down.
Absolutely.
Because supply far exceeds demand.
Absolutely. So a couple of people that I pay attention to say that they believe that the residential real estate market still has between 15% and 20% to fall. Now,
are they right?
I don't
that.
Know. I'm not that kind of a number cruncher. But if that's true, and I also know that we are only seeing the beginnings of the commercial real estate market going to hell, we still have a whole big glut of real estate, whether that be commercial or residential, to get through. And that does not bode well for the economy.
Right. I think something, it's like 11-month supply. If they didn't build another house, they got 11-month supply of houses.
Oh, my gosh.
But they're not stopping. I mean, you know, building starts are way down, but they're still at like 500,000 houses a year pace.
Well, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily surprise me. I have read, and I have not bothered to confirm the numbers, but I have read that there are five states, that comprise the majority of real estate foreclosures and delinquencies. Now, if that's true, then yes, there have got to be pockets where development is warranted.
Well,
and
that
could well very well be in the 500,000 units a year range.
Well, Madison, Wisconsin is not exactly what you call a hot spot. We're in the middle of nowhere.
Ah, gee, that sounds familiar to me.
not quite that far in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, okay.
You know, people actually have to pass by going from one place to another here.
Oh, well.
Minneapolis to Chicago, Chicago, you know, you actually have to go through the neighborhood.
Well, you're a thriving metropolis from my point of view, then.
Yeah. Phil?
Yes?
I used to live in a town that had one stop sign and, you know, 80 people, and that's a thriving metropolis compared to where you live.
Yeah, I know. One of the things that we talk about here in Trinity County is we have no stoplights. None whatsoever.
All right. So, but even in Madison, even in Wisconsin, they're facing, I believe it's something like 30% increase in foreclosures.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, that's a pretty significant thing. And we've been running double-digit increases for each of the last 7 years.
In terms of housing starts?
No, in terms of foreclosure.
Oh, in terms of foreclosure.
Increasing percentage.
Ouch.
You know, so, you know, it hasn't, in a lot of regards, it hasn't slowed down. It's actually picked up the last year and a half here.
Mm-hmm.
Just like it has pretty much everywhere else. But Madison is not, you know, is not one of the hot spots. It is, I think it's pretty there. Chicago, from everything I can tell from my parents and from when I'm down there visiting,
mm-hmm.
They're getting creamed, absolutely creamed down there.
Oh, boy.
So, I agree. There are places where building is going to be reasonable. And
yep.
Apparently Texas is actually doing pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
There are places where I can see that going. But, you know, people are going to start recognizing that Texas has got something going, and they're going to get a flood of people, you know, which is fine. Now, obviously, I'm a contrarian, because we're talking about moving into California.
Yeah.
So, you gotta think that, maybe because everybody's leaving, that's not necessarily a bad time to be going in. However, it's not enough to talk about California having come to its senses, at least temporarily, and voting to get the budget process a little bit better under control.
Mm-hmm.
But something else happened in November.
Yes, it did.
You and I disagree on certain points of this, but I don't know how much we disagree on all of it.
I don't know that we disagree fundamentally. I think we disagree about effects, and I think that we...
Well, let's talk about it.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Let's be specific about it.
Okay. Proposition 8.
Back in June, I think it was June, the California Supreme Court ruled that California's system whereby heterosexuals could get married and homosexuals could get civil unions.
Yes.
Was discriminatory.
Yes, they did.
And therefore not allowable under California Constitution.
Yes.
And it basically said marriage for all, because the system is not correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to use a phrase that I don't think was used specifically in the opinion, but it is in fact what they said. The California Supreme Court said that separate but equal was discriminatory and in violation of the California Constitution.
Yes.
If you have two systems that are equal, they provide exactly the same benefits, but one group must use one system and another group must use the other system.
Right.
And the distinction between the two groups is an inherent characteristic. That is discrimination, separate but equal, and not valid.
That's what they said.
That's what they said. So, the people in California, having learned how to vote, immediately put together what was called Proposition 8, in which they said that basically marriage would be between a man and a woman, and that would be it.
They defined marriage. That's true.
And that law, that proposition, passed in November.
And incidentally, you have to understand, that was a constitutional amendment.
Right. Constitutional amendment to the California Constitution.
Yep.
One of the few places in the country where amendments to the Constitution can be done by proposition.
Yes.
So, now, about 15 seconds after the polls closed, it probably felt like that to some people, there were lawsuits seeking to prevent that amendment from actually taking hold.
Yes.
And those lawsuits were heard in March, oral arguments in front of the California Supreme Court, and the question was, ignoring everything else, because there was a lot of questions involved.
Right.
But basically speaking, the question was, did Californians have the right to go to the polls and amend their constitution in such a way as to create, well, actually, the question was, did Californians have the right to go to the polls to amend the constitution?
Yes.
And the Supreme Court ruled that, in fact, they did.
Yes, they do.
Now.
And frankly, I'm surprised that those lawsuits were brought on those grounds.
Actually, they were brought on several grounds, and I have not read the opinion yet. As a matter of fact, it's been, normally I hear a lot of talking and discussion about this. I have not heard a whole lot of discussion about it today.
LaShawn Barber has a link to the 143-page opinion.
Yeah, I will read it in the next couple of days.
Yeah. And incidentally, it was a 6-1 vote.
I have read the original California opinion, and I've read the Iowa opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually paying attention to the fact that we get in the media and even from some bloggers too much parsing of what the opinion is.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I want to get a really good feel by reading the whole thing myself and putting it through the filter of having worked for an attorney for the last 10 years.
Yep.
And see what it says. And that was why I made some pretty strong arguments to people on the right last June when the Supreme Court came down, ruling that the system was discriminatory, where they're saying it's judicial activism, and I'm saying, no, it's not. It's clear in the California Constitution that separate but equal is discriminatory. It is clear that it would have been struck down given that situation.
You know, absolutely.
It wasn't activism, it was pure law.
Yep, absolutely.
So, the question I have is, did the justices reach an opinion upon the idea that the Californians could go to the polls and amend their constitution in such a way as to deprive a class or a group of people a right? Now, that's one of the questions that was being asked, and I am interested to find out how they ruled on that specific point.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that I got into about a year ago on redstate.com was the idea that if the majority of people in the United States could hold it together long enough, the people of the United States could in fact vote a change to our Constitution that could deprive people of a right.
Yep.
Now, I found that idea to be offensive, that Americans would not go and vote against a right, that they would, in fact, you know, join together and say, we're going to take a particular minority and we're going to strip them of a right. And I'm like, Americans wouldn't do that. Well, apparently, in California, they think it's okay.
I wouldn't characterize it that way.
Well, I understand that. And that's why I want to see how they ruled. Because, and you are right, and the thing that most disturbed me about my review of my, at the time, limited and poorly understood understanding of our Constitution was that, you know, we are a majority rule country with lots of protections on the minorities.
Yes.
But it is clear that our Constitution allows for the majority to deprive a minority.
Yes.
And frankly, that should scare the living bejesus out of conservatives.
Oh, absolutely.
Because conservatives need to understand that if they argue, and I believe they have been for the last 20 years, if they argue that the government has a right to strip a group of rights, then it is possible for a large number of people to strip conservatives of those rights.
But you see, I think there's another way to look at that.
Okay.
And the other way to look at that is, not in the context of Proposition 8, but in the context of, if a government, via its people, can strip people of its rights, or a right, it can also create rights out of whole cloth.
Go ahead and finish your thought. I have an opinion.
And I know that you have an opinion, and I know that we disagree on it. The classic example of that is Roe v. Wade. 30-some-odd years ago, out of whole cloth, we said, the Supreme Court said, oh, by the way, there is an unfettered right to an abortion. Out of whole cloth, they invented that right. My perception is that this is the backlash of that kind of judicial tampering with rights. Oh, you want to create a right? That's fine. We have an ability, at least in the state of California, to say, nope, you went too far, folks. And that's what I think Proposition 8 was really about.
Okay.
Now, do I think that's a good thing? Nope, I don't. I think that that is a horrible example. I don't like it. But you know what? Given the choice between being able to amend the Constitution and being unable to amend a Constitution that is subject to the personal preferences and prejudices of a Supreme Court justice, I will take the ability of the people to amend that Constitution.
Let me address the idea of creating a right out of whole cloth.
Okay.
Because you know this has been a particular place that I've been harping strenuously.
You and me both. You and me both.
Okay. One, rights are not created by some government fiat. They are not granted to us by our Constitution. A universe, an infinite number of rights exists simply waiting for somebody to discover it. The analogy I used is like stars in the sky. Until you have the right abilities, resources, and imagination to look, you cannot see every star that's out there. You cannot conceive of every right that is possible in our inheritance.
Yep. I'm not disagreeing with you so far. I will bring up the distasteful matter, though, of saying, oh, my rights are infinite. I can marry my horse if I'd like to.
Well, here's what I have to say.
Yeah, okay.
If your horse can say I do.
It can. You have to be able to speak horse, but yeah, it does.
Pretty much has to do it in a court of law.
Yeah, I understand that. And that is where the problem arises.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
because a right, okay, is limited to your actions.
Well, and anybody else I can get to agree with me.
But then they're just exercising their rights.
Yeah.
They're not exercising your rights. They're exercising their rights.
That's a distinction without a difference, but okay.
No, because I could then, let me use an example. Oh, God, I'm going to get hell for this. Okay?
Oh, you are. But it's okay. This is Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. If you wanted to marry a 12-year-old.
Yep.
Okay. You have a right to get married.
I do.
The person of your dreams.
Yep. 12 okay. years old.
That 12-year-old does not have the freedom to exercise that particular right.
Of course they do. Those rights are infinite.
No.
Yeah. You just said they were. They are infinite.
No. I said there is an infinite universe of rights.
Yep.
That a right is not infinite. A right has limitations.
I don't think that's what I said, but if I did say that, I apologize, and I won't say that again.
Okay. So here's the situation. Your right, okay, to marry is limited by the fact that everyone thinks you're a woof-woof and nobody wants to marry you.
Yeah.
You can have the right to marry, but if someone does not accede and in fact act upon their right to marry you, then you have no right to demand another do so.
So that 12-year-old says, yeah, I want to get married to that old dude.
Sorry.
Wow, what do you mean, sorry?
We have created a system called society. Listen to me carefully. We have created a system called society, and we have granted power to an organization called government. In which we have decided that there is a certain amount of our right that we will accede to government so that government may enforce limitations on all of us equally. And that process by which we grant government some of our sovereignty to rule in a way that limits our rights, we call the U.S. Constitution.
Okay.
That Constitution
limits
our infinite universe of rights. However, your right, by natural limitation, only can extend to the extent of your reach.
I see.
Your right is not an unlimited right to act.
So tell me, Tracy, it's okay for that 12-year-old to get an abortion because that's her right? But it's not okay for her to make a decision to marry an old guy like me.
We have decided...
We? That's we the people? Those folks who voted?
We the people have decided in our individual states that the right to marry can be freely exercised by any person by what they call majority.
Yep.
In some places, that's 14.
Mm-hmm.
In other places, it's 16.
Yep.
And the majority of places, it's 18.
Yep, that's true.
And that is a choice that each community, and I mean this by state,
right,
can make. Now, you wish to bring up the idea of abortion.
No, I'm using that only as an example. And the reason that I use that as an example is because it is a clear dichotomy. Yes, it is. It is a clear dichotomy between the right of the people to decide something and what we are arguing, which is, can people deny a right to somebody?
Here is my point as far as the 12-year-old is concerned.
Okay.
Yes, she has a right to an abortion.
Hello?
Did you hear me?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't.
Said the 12-year-old has a right to an abortion.
And they have that right because?
It's inherent in their own desire to control their body. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there's a whole lot of mess that you've instituted by picking 12 that wouldn't exist if you had picked 16 or 18 or even 30.
I understand that. I picked 12 precisely for that reason.
Okay. One, we have decided that 12-year-old cannot give consent to intercourse.
And that is exactly my point, Tracy.
So,
and that
the
point
action,
is
that
the
means
people
that
the people can decide what rights people other people have.
No, they can decide how much of a limit to impose upon other people.
No, that any limitation, I will quote your words to you. Every law is an inhibition of a right.
Is a limit on a right. Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
It is an infringement upon a right.
That's exactly right.
That 12-year-old has the right to an abortion.
And I'm telling you, if they have a right to an abortion, they also have a right, under that same logic, to make up their own mind who and when they want to marry.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And go on. Yeah, because if we have given government the power to limit that 12-year-old's right to have an abortion, okay, we're limiting the free expression of that right. We have and can do so, limit that 12-year-old's, expression of freedom in getting married.
But we didn't limit that first right, did we?
Sure we did.
No, we didn't.
Sure
we said, hey, yeah, you got this right, but you know what? We aren't going to let you enforce it. We aren't going to let you act on it, on the marriage issue of the 12-year-old. We will, however, let you act on it in regards to the abortion issue. My point is this.
Here's where you lose. Okay,
that is not where I lose.
Here's where you lose.
Every time you pass a law that says, government, I'm the government, and by my judicial decisions, I can limit your rights. Every time that you have a state like California that says, by the way, Californians, other states also, but California is one that says, by the way, you can place a constitutional amendment on the ballot on your own volition. You don't have to go through anybody else. You do have to get enough signatures, et cetera, to qualify, but you can place it on the ballot. If the majority of the people decided, we don't care if six-year-olds get married. They could put that in the Constitution.
Yes, they can.
Yep. If they say, oh, gosh, by the way, if you're a white male, you don't get to vote anymore. Yep. They could do that.
Yep, they can.
Yep.
Where your argument fails.
Okay.
And it's an important distinction, and it's, you'll make the argument that it can't be done, so therefore it makes no difference whether the right exists or not. But I tried to use this as an example because it's important to me.
Okay.
That 12-year-old, let's assume for a second that this is feasible, can reach into her body and remove that child and place it on the table. She has the absolute right to do so. Governments can't stop it. Parents, unless they physically restrain her, can't stop it. Nobody can stop her from doing that, and nothing that has ever been in our laws prevents her from doing it.
Okay.
Okay. Even if abortion were outright banned in this country tomorrow, that 12-year-old has the absolute right to do that.
No. They have an absolute capability of doing that.
No, they have the absolute
that
right.
That doesn't, no. They do not necessarily have a right to do it. They have a capability of doing it.
No, they have the right.
No, they don't. They have a capability.
They may have a limitation upon the free exercise of that right. But that right exists. You can limit, you can deny, but you can't extinguish.
I'm thinking that we're getting bogged down in semantics.
Possibly.
Yeah.
So let's get out of that topic.
Okay. Works for me. and by the way, folks, do not ever assume that any argument that I make is my personally held belief.
On this show, I'm gonna have to think about this for a second.
Okay.
On this show, unless I specifically state otherwise, every argument I make is my specific belief.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just warning folks that I may make arguments to counter Tracy that I don't necessarily believe are how it ought to work.
Well, for me, at this point, best I can tell, in the past, and it's been my intent to hold positions that I, in fact, hold.
Yep. But every once in a while, I have to play foil to you.
That's true.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
That's fine because it is a natural position for me when I enjoy somebody's arguments.
Yep.
And I don't mean that in the fighting arguments, but simply the fact that
right.
it's a good, solid debate.
Yep.
That when I enjoy that person's ability to do so, I will simply take an opposite position of theirs just simply to enjoy the conversation.
Absolutely. You betcha.
But in general, on this show, I have not done that and don't perceive that I'm going to do that only because, that's there. We've got a caller.
Hey, cool. Who's
our
caller?
Let's find out who this caller is from area code 301.
Ooh.
So, whoever you are, say your name and where you're from.
Louisa from Maryland.
This is my buddy Louisa from Conservative Talk. And I am so glad you called in, Louisa.
Thank you. I know you can't the topic, but I just want to make the point, whether you want to develop it or not, in terms of the right to terminate a pregnancy. There's an issue that hasn't been really developed, and that is when life begins.
Yep.
And you're saying the right to terminate a pregnancy, you're assuming because that person is attached to someone's body, they therefore have the right to terminate their life. That is like, that deserves a little bit more thought and contemplation. Life begins at conception, and if that life is within someone's body, the person that is housing that life doesn't have the right to terminate it, but they certainly have the ability, and no one could be the wiser for it.
Well, actually, okay, I was going to be pretty flippant about that, and I need to be a little bit more cautious about that. That is, in fact, basically where the Supreme Court came down in Roe v. Wade, was that the issue of privacy existed, and that privacy, because it focused in specifically on women's privacy to do with their bodies what they wanted, meant that abortion was going to be something that would be possible as a consequence of that privacy. So the issue mostly in Roe v. Wade was decided correctly because the issue was, does a woman have a right to privacy? And that is the whole cloth that Bill speaks of, although not specifically that he meant in this particular area, but, you know, people have...
The right of privacy doesn't supersede the right to life. But here's something interesting about Roe v. Wade. Do you know about Norma McCorvey? Do you know about any of that at all?
Do I know that she repudiated what she had done and has argued against abortion pretty much for the last 15 or 20 years? Yes, I do.
And that she has never had an abortion, nor was she ever gang raped? Do you know any of that?
It's irrelevant.
Just an interesting fact, that's all. I agree it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Anyway, I won't stay on. I just want to say that the ability to terminate a life within you is present for everybody. The right to terminate a life because it is attached to your body is non-existent. It's not ethical. That's my position. I just wanted to add that. That's all.
Louisa, thank you.
There might be a certain
ethical.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks, Louisa. I certainly think that there certainly can be an ethical point of view that, you know, restricts people's behavior, and that's one of those other natural limitations to rights, is that how people feel towards those areas. Louisa, I hope you're still listening. This is a place where I am in strong disagreement with a great number of my conservative friends. I disagree. I believe that up until the point of viability, the rights of the mother supersede the rights of the child. And in fact, the child has no rights up until the point where the child is viable. So regardless of the argument about where life begins, it's not important for me. I will concede the point that life begins at conception in the most basic of meanings of the concept of life. Do I believe a child's life begins at the moment of conception? No. There is no child there. There is a potential child there. Now, there is much closer to being a child there at 8 or 10 or 15 weeks, but it is still at that point potential. And I understand that this position that I hold here now, my position, is strongly disputed, strongly opposed by a vast majority of conservatives. Understand that, okay? And I'm probably never going to be able to get past that argument with anybody, but until the ability to exercise a right exists, the right doesn't exist.
Tracy, let me bring up two instances where I think the argument fails.
We have 4 minutes, Bill. Fire away.
Yep, I know. One of them is this. You state that Roe v. Wade said a woman has a right to privacy. By implication, that means all people have a right to privacy.
Correct.
But there are numerous examples, and I will give you one of those where that is not true. Did you know that it is a criminal misdemeanor to not give your personal private information to the census? Where is our right to privacy? And those are decided court cases.
Wait a second.
Yes. Wait a minute.
Hey,
if I have a right to privacy, then I have a right to privacy.
You have a right to privacy, and government, because we have agreed to it, government has the ability to create a law that infringes upon it.
And that is my point. Government did not make that law. Our courts made that law. And that is wrong. Pure and simple, it's wrong. Now, if the United States Congress had said, yes, we recognize that life begins at conception, but until there is viability, there is no right to that life, then okay, you can say that the American people spoke and that was the law of the land. But you had a court that took that, in my words, out of whole cloth. And I'm saying, nope, I'm sorry, that's wrong. Let me give you the second example. What do you do with that person who is unable now, because of age, to provide for their own life needs? Do they have, or is it permissible, to simply let them die?
Is it permissible to let them die?
Yep. Can you say, no, we are not going to, and this goes back to our last discussion about, gee, how do we balance the budget? Oh, health care? Nah, I'm sorry, if that isn't cost effective, you aren't getting it. Oh, I'm sorry, you're comatose, you are bedridden, you are unable to feed yourself, you are unable to clean yourself, you are unable to whatevers. I'm sorry, we're just going to withhold everything and let you die. Same principle, applied differently.
Not same principle.
Same principle. It is the society that is deciding that. In this case, Roe v. Wade, it was the court under an Obama health care plan. It is, that's not cost effective, no more food for you.
Well, yes, society can withhold, you know, the demand of a person upon the society. You know,
so then we have to say, when does personhood start?
Here's the deal, okay?
And end.
If you are hungry,
yep.
Okay, you do not have the right to demand from me food.
Okay. Yep.
If you are homeless, you do not have the right to demand from me a home.
Okay.
This is the issue that, we got 55 seconds.
I know. Isn't it terrible?
I'm not even going to get close to being able to.
I know. Can't do it. Shout out to my CT buddies. That's all I needed.
Okay. So we didn't even get to the Supreme Court now.
I know. God.
But I will make this. We have 35 seconds. I'll make this prediction. I said it to you earlier.
Yep.
I wager that Sotomayor will not stand for the nomination. She will be withdrawn before she actually gets in front of Congress.
Another Harriet Myers, you think?
I don't know if it's quite that bad, but yeah, I do.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, Bill, Tracy, God has been great.
I appreciate it. We'll get on to this more.
You betcha.
In the meantime, everyone else, see you next week.
You betcha. Night, Tracy.
We're done.
Hey, that is so cool. That was a good show. That was a good show.
It is going to be forever a problem.
Yep.
And it's not resolvable. This is, you know what, I've said this before, okay? I can suggest to you that I'm agnostic.
Yep.
Okay, I'm perfect. I am agnostic. That's not a suggestion. I am. Okay. But if Christ were to appear in the clouds today, okay, on my knees, bashing my head, going, fucking idiot, fucking idiot, fucking idiot, fucking idiot. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I am the product of my life. And my
Absolutely.
Life includes the fact that I grew up Roman Catholic, that at one point in my life I was fundamentalist Christian, and those experiences and that knowledge, you know, shaped who I am.
Absolutely.
Can't take it away.
Nope.
But at the same token, I, as an adult, can make a choice, and I have.
Yep.
In many, many areas. The abortion issue, and it's something that I have gone not back and forth on, but over the last year I have done a significant amount of, you know, deep thinking. I won't say soul searching because that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, right. Gee, it's hard to search your soul when you're an agnostic, right?
I believe that I am more than my physical body.
Absolutely.
Okay. So if you want to ascribe that to a soul, that's fine. We can agree with
yeah.
spirit, soul.
Whatever.
I am simply more than the sum of my parts.
Yep.
And anybody that suggests, and I would suggest even an atheist would... with any kind of sense of self, would agree to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as a matter of fact, that is a sense of self, is that soul, that spirit, that greater than the sum.
Yep.
So I have done a fair amount of deep thinking about it, trying to determine whether my position on rights, because, you know, you and many others have made the argument that if life begins at conception, then those rights, which I say emphatically are inherent in our creation, inherent
mm-hmm.
in our existence,
yep.
do they exist at that moment of conception?
Yep. I understand your argument.
And, of course, I come to the point and say, no. No matter
and
how
yet,
much, I'm sorry.
And yet, you're willing to say, oh, you can't feed yourself, you are unable to take care of yourself, yep, perfectly permissible to let you die.
Yeah, it is perfectly permissible to let me die.
Yeah, okay.
Because you don't have the right to demand from me that which benefits you.
And you know what? I mean, think back to the Schiavo case. Regardless of the merits of the arguments on any side of that, you had some people asserting that person's rights, and you had at least one other person who was saying, nope, I'm sorry, that's a burden, I'm not going to take it. Regardless of whether the other people were willing to take that or not.
And... our laws have created a situation where a person not capable of exercising their freedoms, okay, has given that responsibility to another.
Yep.
Now, of course, my argument on the Schiavo case was, you know, I did not get the husband's point of view. Frankly, if he thought it was an issue, you know, I would have washed my hands of the affair and simply turned her over to her parents.
Sure.
However,
yep.
I certainly understood the concept that he believed that was not his wife's wishes and that he sought to exercise his wife's wishes as he understood them.
Yep.
And, you know, So, you know, from the parent's point of view, I understand, you know, wash your hands, walk away, you know, but if I have taken, and I'm going to use a situation that is so minor in comparison to it, but it is generally appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, he, as part of that marriage bond and pairing, is going to exercise his wife's wishes to his fullest ability. He's going to allow her to die because that's what she wants. It is a responsibility that you, I know, take in a much lesser vein when you look at one of your animals and go, this animal is suffering, it is my responsibility, and you put the animal down.
Yep.
And that's why I said we're not even talking about magnitude difference here. We're talking about...
Yeah, I know.
The enormity
difference. But I understand the argument.
But that's the argument, that, you know, he is doing what his wife wants, and he can't wash his hands of that, no matter how much it would make sense to do so, no matter how much, you know, he's enjoined to do so,
mm-hmm.
because what everyone else wants is not what his wife wanted. Now, whether
according to him,
whether she in fact made that point of view or not, you know, nobody is able to determine.
Well, at least the courts weren't.
Yeah, at least the courts weren't. You know, I'm sure there's a certain amount of argument to suggest that that's not true. I can tell you that any
person, and I don't know if they are or aren't.
You know, I can tell you that virtually any person that I've ever had personal knowledge and contact with,
yep.
Okay, in that situation has said specifically to me. I know because I've said specifically to them.
Yep.
You get me in that position and you keep me in that position, I swear to God.
Yeah, I will come back and haunt you.
I am coming back and I am going to figure out some way to physically damage you permanently.
Yes, indeed.
Don't you even think for a second that that's what I want to be in a situation of.
Exactly.
So
and I have that same view.
You know, and that's the point of view that I think most honest, reasonable people have.
But unless they have specifically stated that to multiple people, not somebody who has a vested interest in it, I'm sorry, I come down on the side of life.
Well, and I understand that.
Yep.
And that would be morally consistent. That would be morally consistent for you to do so.
Yep.
However, I don't, and that is also consistent.
I'm absolutely.
So.
You know, I love this topic not because I think it to be trivial. I love this topic because we get those points of view out so people can talk about it.
Well, I think, you know, what I think is important is that when we have this conversation,
mm-hmm.
It's not so much that they're talking about is that we know, you and I know, that we differ on this position.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And we can argue without it descending into,
yep.
you know, fighting and name-calling and stuff like that because...
Exactly.
You know, it's not going to happen that way.
Exactly.
But, you know, and the thing that I look for is, in fact, and if you want to call it moral consistency, you know, there's certainly a philosophical consistency that you know, both of us, I think, stand on. And I think I would suggest, I know for a fact in my case, and I think it applies in your case, you can concede or disagree, I know that most of the positions that I hold today are no different than the positions I've held for the last 20 years.
Yep.
But I also know that the positions I hold today are much more well-supported in my own mind, in my own sense of knowledge, in my own, you know, education, if you will. I don't hold my positions now because I think they're the right ones. I hold my positions because based on research, thought, consideration, and a lot of reading, they're consistent with the philosophies that underpin them. They're not just, well, because it feels right. You know, there's actually substance behind them now.
Yep.
Where there wasn't 2 years ago.
Well, and that's true for me also. It took the whole political situation now to make me think deeply about what do I believe, why do I believe that, how does that square with conservative values, and I have to tell you I am most grateful that we can agree to disagree without it turning into some rancorous name-calling, denigrating conversation. That is just an absolute marvel.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, I know that, you know, because your position is well thought and well substantiated and morally consistent, that I'm not going to change your mind on it.
Yeah, right.
But I think you agree that's not important because this conversation is not for me and you.
Absolutely.
This conversation is for who's listening.
Exactly. And you know, the best thing that can happen for this whole thing is for people to talk to each other, not at each other. Not name-calling, simply saying, here are the issues that I see. And let that conversation develop. Because that's the only way we're going to get to any kind of a resolution. And we may not get to a resolution. I mean, I understand and recognize that. But nevertheless, if we don't have the conversation, we don't have a chance of getting to the resolution either.
Right. Now, I like to think that you have modified your marriage issue a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm not, frankly, I am not against, and I have to word this carefully without using loaded terms, I am not against homosexuals having lifelong commitments to each other, any more than I am against heterosexuals having lifelong commitments to each other. My real primary issue is, what happened to this vaunted separation of church and state? Why in the world is the government involved in marriage to begin with? I mean, they ought not to be there.
Right.
And you and I agree on that.
Right, and that's the place where, you know, my stance on rights and limited government, you know, run right smack into the right.
Exactly.
You
know? I
know.
You know, and you know, unfortunately, we never really got to the meat of that argument, which is, do governments have a right, or do the people have a right to limit rights? I have to tell you, my personal opinion is, I'm sorry, they don't. They do not have an ability to limit rights.
You're talking about government does not have the ability to limit rights.
I'm coming closer to the point where I'm saying, I'm sorry, the people don't have an ability to limit rights. If my rights are, and I'm trying to remember the phrase in the Constitution,
No, you're correct.
We hold these things to be self-evident. That the people do not have an ability to limit those. They can outlaw them to their everlasting shame and degradation, but they do not have an ability to deny them.
Well, and now, it is, you know, we broke away because of it is a semantics thing.
Yep.
In part, you know, and I've had this argument with somebody before, you know, where they said, you know, a right isn't a right until it's a legal right.
I don't.
And I'm
like
going,
sorry. Ain't there.
No.
Yeah. Right.
You know, the right exists. It always exists. It can never be. It can never be extinguished once it's there.
Yep.
Okay. And it can certainly be restricted. It can certainly be limited. It can even be denied. But it doesn't change. You know, and here's the example that I would have used. You have the freedom to walk around wherever you want to go.
Yep.
In public. Let's forget about
that.
You have the right to walk into a bank mall.
Right.
Okay. You have the right to walk around. Well, you know, the government can take away that right to walk around by incarcerating you.
Yes, they can.
Okay.
But they do that by force, not by anything else.
Right. We have given it that right, the right to do so. But that doesn't change the fact that the right to walk around still exists. You're simply being limited in your ability to do so.
Yep. And I have, assuming that I am willing to go to those extents, the right to resist that.
You have the right to resist that. And if, perchance, government says, oh, we screwed up, sorry, and they let you back out, then you may again freely exercise the right that has never left you.
Yes.
Okay. So, therefore, and I think you actually agree with this, but you were making the argument anyways.
Yeah.
Therefore, the person stuck in the comatose bed, once those rights have attached, they're attached. They cannot be extinguished. They're always there. Even if you cannot freely exercise them, even if you are limited by your own abilities or resources or restricted, you know, from actually expressing them, doesn't change the fact that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're there, they're there. And the only thing that separates your rights from you once they're there is death.
Yep.
Upon your death, your rights end.
Cease. At least in terms of this world.
They cease to exist.
Don't read any more into that than is there.
Done, finished, over.
Yeah, right.
this is the place where it gets really, really careful. You know, and this is kind of what I was trying to say last week. This idea that the dead cannot bind us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Payne uses the phrase, neither the dead nor the not yet born,
I'm gonna have to look that up.
Yes, there's no rights. If you're not born, you don't have rights. If you're dead, you don't have rights. And because of the nature, those two groups will never see each other.
Yeah.
And the idea that one can bind the other, you know, is ludicrous. And I agree. The dead cannot bind the not yet born.
Yeah, that's true. I'll go
any
along with
that. Any more than they can bind those that are alive. Now, I have used, you know, extensively the entire idea of born, you know, and I have used it in not so nice a way Bible literalists,
mm-hmm.
where I said, please tell me the exact second that Adam was conceived.
Okay.
And, of course, at that particular point is when God took the dust and spit upon it.
Yep.
Okay. But God did not consider that Adam in existence until he breathed the life into him.
Yep.
Now, I'm not willing to concede that until that child takes its breath.
Yeah. Okay. I knew where you were going.
that is where rights attach. That is, in fact, where the left attaches them.
Mm-hmm.
Although Barack Obama doesn't. You know, he goes beyond that point.
Yep. You know. Incidentally, are you a Tom Clancy fan?
I've read a couple of things. I like it, but he's... You know, I have an extremely vivid imagination,
mm-hmm.
and Tom Clancy doesn't allow that.
Yeah, he leads you down a path, that's for sure. Yep.
You know, he's so detailed that you either see it the way he sees it.
Yeah.
You know, and so what I end up doing with Clancy is when I realize that he's getting into a paragraph where he's going to spend the next 2.5 pages.
Yeah, you skip. It's what I do with English writers. You know, when they take 2.5 pages to describe the vestibule that somebody just walked into, I'm saying, nah, I'm sorry. No, I don't need that.
I go, and so I end up skipping big chunks of his book, and it's not fun reading that.
Yeah, no, I understand. But he treated that with the whole hospital scenario in, I think it was Red China. Run, Rabbit, Run. Maybe, I think that was it, but maybe not. Where it was an unauthorized pregnancy, and so they induced, and the woman went into labor. And what they were going to do was inject formaldehyde into the baby's brain when it crowned. And to me, and to Clancy, that was barbaric.
Yeah.
But it begs the question of, when did that life actually begin?
And,
I
you
mean,
know,
according to the Chinese, you're born at 1 year of age.
Right.
Because they recognize that, oh yeah, you were alive before you were actually delivered out of the birth canal. Or C-section, if that was the case.
Yeah, and so my position has been, if rights attach, you know...
When you can exercise them.
When
that, that's a phrase that you have used in the past.
Yeah, when you can exercise them.
Mm-hmm.
Then at that point, they have attached. And
so
at that
you take,
point...
You, so you take the sentient person who... is physically incapable of caring for themselves. However, their brain is still active and they are still able to converse, etc., etc. And you say, gosh, we're sorry. You are not able to provide for yourself. It is therefore permissible to simply quit caring for you. And
well,
that is
yeah.
a logical conclusion from your premise.
No.
Yes, it is.
Because you're putting the situation, you know, you're putting the onus on a different person.
No, I'm not. I am simply saying if your premise is correct, that if you cannot sustain your life independently, then you have no right to that life.
No, that's not true at all.
That is exactly the argument that is made.
No, but it's that's not the argument I make.
I'm saying that's the argument that the pro-abortion folks make.
Well, I don't care about their situation. We're talking about my point of view. Okay, my point of view is simply, once the right attaches, it's there. It can't be taken away.
So when does the right attach? I say it happens at conception.
And I suggest to you that there is nothing to attach to.
Wow. Tracy.
What?
Good grief. The heart beats at 5 weeks. That's before most women know they're pregnant.
No.
Yeah.
Listen to me. Right, a right is an action. Okay? A right is an action.
No.
Yes.
A right is not an action. A right
is
inherent.
An inherent what?
It is, the right is inherent to life.
No, you're giving
yes.
right as a noun, okay? Define the noun.
The right to life.
Okay, so you're, no.
Yeah.
You're applying, not a definition to right, okay? You're applying the right to a second noun. You're taking a right and applying it to life, okay? I'm telling you, I want you to define what right is. What is a right? Define it without using an example of what a right might be. Define the right. Define a right. Because you can say a right is the right to speech. Or the right to walk.
Or the right to life.
Or the right to life.
Yeah.
Okay. Define right.
A right to life.
No.
What?
You're not defining the right. You're kind of like saying, I'm asking you to define a room, and you're saying, it's pink. You're applying the color to the room. You're not defining the room. Okay? So I say, please define the room. It's pink. That's not definition. It's an application. You're applying the word to an action. Define the word. What is a right?
Well, let me turn that back on you. Go ahead. I define it.
A right is an action.
No.
Yes.
No. I can have a right that I do not act upon.
Oh, no.
Yes, I can.
No. I... You're absolutely correct. You can have a right you don't act upon.
Yep.
Okay? That doesn't change the fact that it exists. Okay? Singing exists. You have the right to sing. You may never sing, and then most people that know me beg me not to do that.
Yeah.
Okay? Please, don't. I like this song. Shut up.
Right. Yeah,
don't
right.
Don't even hum
Please
it.
Be quiet. Yeah,
don't
right.
even hum it. Don't even mouth it a little bit.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
there's
just
air coming up. Okay? You can have the right to sing and never exercise it. Doesn't change the fact that the right is there.
Yep.
Okay? It is an action. A right is an action. It is singing. You have the right to sing. It is the right to act.
I have the right to either sing or not sing.
That is a choice. It is not a right.
No, it's a right.
Is the right.
You can't
make
me sing if I don't want to.
Or not. You make the choice whether to express the right or not. You don't decide whether the right exists or not. The right exists. You make a decision of whether to express it or not. Government makes a decision whether you shall be limited or restricted or denied that right to act. Okay? But it doesn't change the fact that it still exists.
And see, that's where my libertarian streak comes out. I'm saying, nope, I'm sorry, the government can physically coerce me into not exercising that right, assuming that they have the firepower to do
that. But the right is always there.
That's exactly right. And that includes the right to life.
But it has to exist first.
And that life exists first.
No, because...
Yes, it does.
No, you can't. Separated
yes,
from the mother, and it separated from the mother, it doesn't exist.
No, no, no. We've already gone through that. Oh, okay, let's see. Your life is dependent upon somebody else taking care of you. You no longer have that right to life.
No. Once
yes.
Right,
Tracy,
right,
it is the same thing on the other end of the spectrum.
No. Once the right attaches, it's there.
And that right attaches at conception.
No, it doesn't. There's nothing to attach to.
It is there. It is life.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Okay? It is no more life than your finger.
Of course it is. It is separate DNA. It is distinguishable from both mother and father. It is unique. It is life.
A tumor is unique. It has its own DNA.
Yeah?
Distinguishable from the parent.
Yeah? Are you arguing that a tumor is alive? In the constellation of rights?
No, I'm not.
Well, then...
Yeah, then, if a tumor has a distinct DNA separate from the parents, it doesn't make it alive.
Oh, a baby is not a tumor, for God's sake.
No, it's not.
That's a bad analogy.
but how you want to define it doesn't make it alive.
And how you want to define it does not make it not alive.
How I define it. Is its capacity
if it can exist by itself. In which case, a three-month-old can simply be starved to death.
But it has
it
a right to life.
It is not capable of taking care of itself.
But it exercises its life.
It is not.
It
no
is
more,
too,
no
it
more
is
so than that baby in the womb.
It is exercising its life.
No, Tracy, listen
it
to
is.
Yourself. How is that different at 3 months of age and 99 years of age and not able to take care of yourself? Tell me how that is different.
The life exists.
And therefore, if life exists at the moment of conception, that is life.
Separate it from the mother. If it continues to exercise the life, I will
conceive
the baby.
You are trying to define an artificial distinction.
Oh, it's a perfectly great distinction because...
It is not, because you cannot apply it to the other end of life.
I can apply it at exactly the other end of life.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
Okay. Apply it.
Okay.
No longer able to take care of itself.
99-year-old person.
Yep.
Okay. Comatose. Vegetable.
Okay, that's fine.
Vegetable.
Yep.
Can't. Just shits all by itself, you know, can't eat, can't do
yep.
nothing.
Yep.
It simply exists.
Yep.
Okay?
And there is no indication that they have said, oh, by the way, if I ever get into that state, I want you to kill me.
It exists. That person exists.
Yep.
Therefore, the right attaches.
You are trying to say, okay... The miraculous moment is when you emerge from the birth canal. That is when life attaches. And I'm sorry, that isn't scientifically accurate.
I did not say that.
That's the argument you're making.
No, I say when the life exists, the right attaches.
Okay.
Okay. And in order to clarify... When that life exists, separate it from the mother.
That's an artificial distinction.
No.
Yes.
For 15 millennia, that distinction occurred when the child was born.
Well, 15 millennia, we had slavery, too. You still in favor of that one?
No, and...
That is
irrelevant and not...
No, it is not irrelevant. What you're saying is, oh, by the way, rights accrue when I think they accrue, and those historical antecedents don't bother me with them.
when the life exists, the right attaches.
Okay.
And
so then we have to say, when does life exist?
Separate it from the mother.
No. Why? Why separate
it
from the mother?
Because until that point in time, okay, it doesn't exist.
Tracy, that is nonsensical.
No.
Yes, it is.
You are equating the child with a life.
I am.
And I'm telling you, you can't.
And I'm telling you, yes, I can.
Well,
just as you can,
have the right to do so.
Can, just as you can equate that 99-year-old who is unable to communicate, unable to feed themselves, unable to shit or anything else, who is connected up to machines that keep them alive, and you're saying, yep, that's a life. Oh,
right.
I'm sorry. If I apply that same criteria, no, it's not a life.
No, you can't apply the same criteria.
Why can't I?
Okay, give me a second, because I'm going to have to explain a fair amount of this before I can use it.
Okay.
Okay? All right? CJ loves apples in the morning.
Okay.
Okay? She buys apples, and every morning she has an apple. Inside
apple
that apple is a seed. Okay?
Yeah.
She can take that seed and plant that seed outside of the apple, and good luck, but for the most part, that seed will grow into an apple tree.
Yep.
Okay? That apple tree will produce fruit. And then that apple tree will stop producing fruit.
Okay.
And then that apple tree will die.
Yep.
Okay? And up until that point in time, what you have is an apple tree. Whether it's producing fruit or not, it is still an apple tree. And even, per se, up until the second you take the tree down and burn it, what you are not left with is an apple seed.
Okay. I'm not real sure where you're going with this, but okay.
Apple seed, apple tree, pile of ashes. You cannot equate the pile of ashes to the apple seed. You cannot equate the dead tree standing in the forest to the apple seed.
Nah, I ain't buying that analogy. I ain't buying that analogy. I'm sorry.
That's fine, but you're asking me to apply how I perceive the apple seed.
No.
I am asking you
to be consistent.
I am.
No, you aren't.
I'm looking at the apple seed and saying, here is a potential apple tree.
And if we were talking about apple trees, I don't have a problem. We aren't talking about apple trees. We're talking about humans.
And I'm telling you that if you take that embryo, that four-cell organism, okay, and lay it out on the table, nothing can happen except for it will cease to exist. If you take that 99-year-old, comatose patient and walk out of the room
and turn the machines off.
Turn the machines off, because it happens too often. Turn the machines off and come back in. Okay? And that person is breathing. Okay? Nothing has changed. Let's take the person that's not on a machine. Okay? Because that adds this complication that's not necessary. Just take the person that's a vegetative state. Okay, laying in a bed.
Mm-hmm.
Not capable of any other action other than just laying there.
Right.
Okay. That person exists. The apple tree exists.
And the fetus exists.
you cannot equate that back to the fetus.
Yes, I can.
And the reason you can't is because if you extend the point, okay, forward, the person that currently exists will cease to exist.
Yeah.
Okay. If I separate the fetus from the mother to find out whether it exists or not, the answer is it doesn't. Until the day it does. This week, I take the child. Let's pretend we've got. Oh, I'm going to regret this. Okay? Fortunately,
yeah, okay.
It's just you, so I don't have to worry about it. Okay?
We aren't on the air. It's okay.
Okay? We have a woman that has quads.
Okay?
She's carrying four.
Okay?
Okay? At 10 weeks, she reaches in, takes one, puts it on the table, nothing happens. Okay, it doesn't exist. It simply starts to wither. 4 weeks later, she does it again, and the fetus withers. Nothing happens. And 4 weeks later, she does it again, and nothing happens. The fetus withers. And then finally, 4 weeks later, she does it again. It exists. Separate from the mother, it exists.
No. And see, that's where we have the fundamental disagreement.
Absolutely. Positively.
Yep.
And I will concede from now until doomsday, your position is morally consistent. And completely irrelevant with regard to rights.
And I will say, I understand your argument, and it is simply wrong as to when life begins, and therefore when rights attach.
Right. And your position is that,
and that's fine. We can disagree about that.
And you know, and that is the place where, you know, it's. You know, there can be no common ground between those two positions.
Yeah, I know. Which is why that common dialogue needs to happen. Because we know right now that there is no common ground.
Well, and this is the point that I have tried to make to conservatives for most of the last year.
Mm-hmm.
You and I cannot find common ground.
But somebody else may be able to.
No, wait a second. You and I cannot find common ground. Okay?
Right.
Because it simply cannot exist. The two positions
right. Are
separated by a gulf that's not crossable.
Right.
Okay? But here's where I think conservatives, especially pro-life people, have where they fail. Okay?
Okay.
My position is common ground for the abortion side.
Okay.
I can bring the abortion side to my point of view.
Okay.
There is enough people on the abortion side that are concerned enough about abortion that I can bring them to the position that I stand on.
Okay.
That I believe is consistent with every other concept of rights we as conservatives hold.
Okay.
There's only one obstacle. Only one.
And that is?
You can't agree to my common ground.
Well, but the same thing is true in reverse.
But here's the problem. You can hold your position, and that will enforce the status quo.
Oh, I see. Now, no, okay, so now you're talking about practical effects.
Practical effects.
Okay. Did you see the latest poll on that, by the way? Did you see the latest poll on that, by the way?
No, and you know what?
54% of the American population says, within the margins of error, of course, that, no, abortion isn't all that great a thing, folks. Now, let me tie that to something you said last week, which is near and dear to your heart, and that is that, and I'm paraphrasing you, I'm not quoting you, and that is that rights for homosexuals will be recognized when enough people stand up and say, wait a second, that's wrong. Yes, they ought to have the same rights as everybody else. That was the gist of your argument. I would submit to you that if you hold that position truly, that the same thing will happen in terms of right to life. And if it is right in one case, it is right in the other.
No, because the two are different, and you know
that. No, they are not different. They are talking about rights.
No, they're different because in the situation of gays, okay, you have I don't want to go into it.
Okay.
The reason I don't want to go into it is because I have to end this conversation pretty soon.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I've got dinner to eat yet.
So, the point that I tried to make to people, especially over at Red State, was the practical effect of the pro-life movement is the status quo.
Well, and see, we disagree on that one too.
No, because as long as you continue to ask people whether they want abortion to be available or not,
mm-hmm.
that number hasn't changed. It still stays up in the 65% to 70% range.
No, that Tracy, that is not true. That is not true. You really ought to go take a look at Rasmussen's poll.
I will look at
Rasmussen's poll. And they have been tracking that for the last, I don't know, 25 years or so.
The
same question.
If in fact, abortion is banned, I will concede that abortion is banned.
Mm-hmm.
I won't concede that we have improved upon the issue of rights at all.
I understand that. And I have the same thing about homosexual marriage. It's kind of like, okay, we're on opposite sides of the fence of each other on those two issues, both of us citing the same arguments.
If the people that, every time I see someone that Twitters this, every time somebody says abortion is murder,
mm-hmm.
I tell them that position is guaranteeing another 40 million dead. Until you get rid of that position, you're guaranteeing the status quo.
Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know that I think that that's accurate, but I understand the argument.
And of course, I always have the problem because I don't know where you fall upon this. I always have the problem with somebody that says, it's murder, and then I say, well, okay, so you're for, imprisoning the mother that commits an abortion for the rest of her life. Oh, no, 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 we're not going to punish the mother. And I'm sitting there like going, huh? What? What do you mean you're not going to punish the mother? She's the one that had the abortion. Oh, but it was done to her. She went looking of her own free will to get it.
Well, you can say that about a lot of laws, Tracy. There's a ton of laws out there that do the same thing, that criminalize non-criminal behavior. And I'm saying That is not an argument that sways me a whole lot.
No, I'm not suggesting it should sway, but I do find it to be inconsistent.
Well, I don't think it's any more inconsistent than libs saying, "Oh yeah, God save those baby seals, but sure, go ahead and abort that kid."
Oh well.
If you talk about the two sides, all I'm saying is, and I am not suggesting that you do not hold your beliefs based on your understanding of what conservatism is. All I'm saying is, yeah, well, you can use that example if you want to, but just be prepared for that kind of a comeback.
And I'm not making it as an argument. I'm only questioning it as, you know, please explain it to me.
No, that's fine.
It doesn't make sense. You know, if you have a doctor and a mother, you know, that the doctor performs an abortion and you're going to imprison the doctor, you know, for murder, but the mother is going to walk away, that doesn't seem to be consistent to me. The doctor.
Well, it may not be consistent in your view, but if no doc is willing to perform that procedure, what does that do to the availability of abortions? Talking about practical effects.
Well, then what you have is you have, you know, the stupid morons going into the back alley and doing it themselves.
Well, I'm thinking that's a pretty overhyped thing, but okay.
Hey, look, you know, only has to happen a couple of times.
Well, you know, that may be true, but that doesn't excuse the fact that they're stupid morons.
Right. Don't ever suggest that I don't understand that they are in fact stupid morons.
I didn't.
I
mean,
most cases,
I was just
by the
using
time
your
they
word.
Realize that that's But in most cases, by the time they realize that that's the situation and that's what they're going to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, they could walk into a hospital and do a C-section and deliver a live baby.
Yep.
And, you know,
yep.
frankly, at that point, I'm sitting there like going, you've got a live baby. You know, quit fucking with it. Just go
deal
to the hospital, have it taken away, and just give it away.
Well, yes. And does that mean that I am in favor in my state, not the feds, but my state, saying we are going to provide much more comprehensive adoption procedures and support? Yeah, absolutely. Damn right. Frankly, most of the women that have an abortion, I don't want them raising a child.
Well, there's certainly that.
Yeah, you know, I'm just,
you know,
I don't.
You know, and I said this a long time ago. I haven't said it since I've been involved with ACP.
Yeah.
But I said it a long time ago. I said, you know, I can give you a way that can eliminate a significant number of abortions, you know, if you're willing to do it.
And
bring
that
back
is?
Orphanages.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I'm not necessarily a big fan of orphanages. I am a big fan of, hey, let's make it a whole lot easier to adopt than what we currently have.
Yeah. Well, remember, I can't adopt CJ.
No, I know. I understand. And that's a damn shame. And those are the kinds of things that we need to be thinking about and working on.
So, the
you know.
All right, we're done for the night.
Okay,
no,
get off.
I appreciate it.
I loved our conversation.
So do I.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Have an evening.
You too. Bye.
Say hey to your wife.
I will do it. Bye-bye.
Bye.